Moramai. Good morning. I'm Judith Lay and this is Praise, the programme that connects faith and daily life. Manx Radio. Welcome to the Praise podcast for the 17th of March 2019. Would you willingly leave a secure home, travel over 2,000 miles, and then spend 3 months living in an area that's full of conflict? Well, Rosemary Clark did just that, and she joins us this morning to tell her story. And in another stage of our Lenten journey to Easter, we'll hear from Dylan and a story of acceptance. But let's start with Bernadette Farrell's beautiful hymn, God Beyond All Names.
God beyond our dreams, you have stirred in us a memory. You have placed your powerful spirit in the hearts of humankind. All around us we have known you, all creation lives to hold you. In our living and our dying, we are bringing you to birth. God beyond all names, you have made us in your image. We are like you, we reflect you. We are woman, we are man. All around us we have known you, all creation lives to hold you. In our living and our dying, we are bringing you to birth. God be
Bernadette Farrell and the Thomas More Singers and God Beyond All Names. Rosemary Clark is a resident of Peel and a member of the ministry team at the cathedral. But she joins us this morning to share her experiences from a time spent in a very different place when she was a member of the Ecumenical Accompaniment Programme in Palestine and Israel. Rosemary did this just about a year ago and was away for 3 months. Let's begin with some background to her story.
Well, as you're probably aware, there have been huge challenges between Palestinians and Israelis for many years. In fact, it goes back millennia. But about 20 years ago, there was a particular uprising and difficulty, and they hoped that the UN would send peacekeepers in. But the UN decided they weren't going to do that. So the churches in Jerusalem were really concerned and wondered whether the churches worldwide would be able to support them and provide some kind of help in this kind of conflict situation. And as a result of that, the World Council of Churches set up this programme. So people go out for 3 months at a time and they live on the West Bank, and they are there for whenever there is a problem to try and make sure that they're supporting whichever side needs the support. So it's very much for both sides, but it's on the side of the underdog. So it's really mainly at the moment the Palestinians who are suffering challenges. So most of my time I was with the Palestinians. Sometimes we were being what we called a protective presence. So you may be aware that there are Israelis who have actually settled on Palestinian land with the blessing of the Israeli government. So you can imagine that the Palestinians are wanting to use such land as they have left right up to its borders. But you'll also understand that the settlers who are living in that area feel quite anxious if they've got Palestinians very close to their settlement. And so sometimes the Israelis are a little bit difficult with the Palestinians. And so sometimes I'd go out with the shepherds with their flocks and we would be quite close to a settlement. And maybe I'd be sitting down and reading a book, but just being there in case there was a problem.
And are you respected by all sides?
I think the Israelis struggle with our presence, but they certainly did modify their behaviour when they saw us.
How much actual danger would you be in?
Well, before we went, we were given 2 weeks training in the UK, and they were quite clear about what had happened to international personnel over the last few years, not just on this programme, but generally in Israel. And there had been some very difficult situations, and they said to us, at any point during the training, or even after the training before you go, if you feel you need to drop out, then that really is okay. I mean, I suppose in one sense I was a bit blasé because back in the early 90s I was in Iraq after the first Gulf War, and that was a conflict zone, and it wasn't quite as bad as I thought it would be. So I thought probably this would be okay. And actually I felt completely safe all of the time I was there. But if people do join the programme, they certainly have to weigh up what the possibilities are and make their own decisions.
Is there anything particular that you would like to talk about?
I think one thing is actually spending time with Palestinians. Until I went, I don't think I'd realised that many of them are actually still living in tented structures. These are Palestinians who would very much like to build their own homes and are prevented from doing so because they can't get planning permission. They can apply, they can pay for their application to be considered, but at the moment, in the land which is on the West Bank, about 60% of it is actually controlled by Israel, even though it's for the Palestinians. For those people who are living under that authority, only 3% of all planning applications get accepted. So basically, you can't get planning permission. So that means that if they want to stay living on their land and working it, then they need to live in these pretty fragile homes. So it's a bit like a polytunnel. They have that metal structure and the domed roof. But instead of having just a polythene exterior, they'll have a much stronger tarpaulin. And maybe they'll insulate it a little bit with maybe some kind of tapestry inside. They might have tiles on the floor. So it feels like a home. But when we first went there, in one particular village, the Supreme Court in Israel had just given permission for the immediate demolition of structures associated with 7 of the homes in this particular village. And so we were asked to spend the night with these families. And in our case, it was a couple. And so to go into their home in the first case and then to be hosted, provided with a lovely meal. Then relatively early in the evening, maybe 9:30, it was bedtime, and they brought out a couple of mattresses for us, some really thick, warm blankets and a pillow. And so we just snuggled up in their living room. But where the door was, there was a gap, a very big gap, so that it was cold. It was the end of January. There had been snow there not much before, but it was a huge privilege to be just living alongside them. And in fact, the first night we were there, the Israeli army didn't come. And the second night, it kind of felt even more tense because you'd wake up maybe at 4 o'clock in the morning and think, is that a rumbling I can hear? Could this be the army coming? And then finding that it wasn't. So as the nights went by, it became more and more, if it didn't happen last night, it'll happen tonight. And then it just didn't happen. And as far as I know, the structures are still there, but still with this imminent threat.
Would you say it was a direct consequence of your presence that the army didn't come during that period?
I don't think I could say that. It was very interesting because the community leader was very proactive and had managed to get some American congressmen to be interested in what was happening in this one particular village. And indeed, he was invited to go over to America and to address Congress and a conference of something like 4,000 people, which was an amazing opportunity. That was while I was there. So I don't think it was as a consequence of our presence. We were there not to stand up in front of any bulldozers at all, because that wouldn't have worked. But if they had have come, we would have been standing alongside the people and helping to share their pain, but also to be eyewitnesses and to be able to take photographs and to be able to say exactly what we had seen so that we could pass that information on to the UN.
Knowing that you are completely impartial, what you were doing, you would be doing for Israelis and for Palestinians, so any evidence that you would produce would be seen to be impartial.
Exactly. But I would say that having spent most of my time with Palestinians and seen the challenges that they faced, it's quite difficult to maintain that impartiality. In another village, there was a man who'd had his leg broken as a result of a stone throwing by Israelis. And we went to see him when he came out of hospital. As he left hospital, his bed was taken by a younger man from the same village who'd been deliberately run over by a quad bike. It was just that those particular settlers didn't want them to be there. And, you know, it's really tough when you see things like that. But I'm not saying that no Palestinians do anything that is wrong, because while I was there as well, there were things happening in Gaza. Now, Gaza is completely separate, and the Palestinians who live there are under a different political leadership, but they're almost caged in. Because one of the things I hadn't realised was that Gaza is only just over half the size of the Isle of Man, but it's got something like 2 million people living there, and they can't go out, ever, or with great difficulty, and they're under a blockade of things coming in, so that their water and electricity supply might only be for a few hours a day. So under that kind of restriction, while I was there, they had marches on Friday after prayers to the fence that keeps them in as a demonstration of their desire to return to their land. The Israelis didn't like it. They shot them. So they sent tear gas first, then they sent rubber bullets, and then they killed more than 100 of them. Over some weeks, they injured more than 1,000 of them. And I can understand how the Palestinians would want in some way to retaliate. And so one of the things they did was to send kites up with burning material attached to them so that they'd fly over the fence and then would land in the Israeli land and would cause fires. Now, you can't condone that, but I can understand it. I mean, what can they do? High unemployment, difficulty of getting education opportunities. You know, their future is so bleak.
No prospect of resolution?
Well, I think it's good to be hopeful as well. And so there were Israelis who were standing alongside Palestinians. There was a group called Rabbis for Human Rights, and they were coming down and they were spending time with the Palestinians and helping them in difficulties with the settlers. There were people who were helping with legal problems, so Israelis who understood Jewish law and would be able to support Palestinians without charging them an arm and a leg. There are women who march every Friday in Jerusalem for a silent vigil to draw attention to some of the injustices. There are ex-army people who are saying, we did wrong when we were in the army, just as can happen in any armed forces, as we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan with our own and American troops. There was a man from the Israeli army and a man from the Palestinians who had been imprisoned aged 14 for 14 years and who together were coming to talk to different groups, and they called themselves combatants, which both of them were, for peace. So there are movements, and there are Jewish people who care. but it's about really helping each other to see what's going on and to find some way forward. But it will be very, very difficult because of the history, because of the hurt, and perhaps most of all because of the fear that there is on both sides.
So this programme of ecumenical accompaniment continues. And in fact, it's very timely that we're having this conversation, because this is the moment when people who would like to join the programme are invited to apply, isn't it?
Absolutely. Applications are open right now and they close towards the end of April. And I'm sure you'll put the information up on the website about exactly how people can apply. We're talking about 2020. So the applications are now, then there's the recruitment process, training, which would happen in November or June. And you can say which 3 months you'd like to go for. But there are other things to think about. People are welcome from any faith or from no faith. What you have to be prepared to do, and this goes for everybody, is to be prepared to go to a mosque, to go to a synagogue, to go to a church service. You're not asked to stand up there and say, I believe, but you're asked to go and to sit in solidarity with different people. Another thing is age. So you have to be at least 25. And at the upper end, you have to be able to move reasonably quickly over rough ground, I guess in case there is tear gas. Finance is not an issue because amazingly it's completely funded. Your costs are paid for the training, for going across to the UK for that, for being out there for your food and accommodation. It's all covered. And I think that's a huge privilege.
Would you say that it has been a good thing for you personally, Rosemary?
It's a fantastic opportunity. That's why I would encourage anybody to seriously consider it. I am a Christian and I found it amazing to have the chance to be in Jerusalem. And there was a chance to visit some of the other teams. And so I was able to be in Bethlehem for a few days, in Jericho for a few days, and to spend Easter in Jerusalem. And then we are allowed a day off or two. And so I went up to Galilee. So on a personal level, it was amazing to be in the Holy Land and to see places deeply associated with my faith. But just to be made aware again of the privileges that I have and the challenges that other people are facing.
Well, Rosemary, you have certainly drawn us into a completely different world. We'll put up all the contact details on the Praise blog via our website, manxradio.com, and then people can look at the websites, look at the information, and if they wish, they could take it a stage further. But Rosemary Clark, thank you very much indeed for joining us and talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
God of tender care, you have cradled us in goodness. You have mothered us in wholeness, you have loved us into birth. All around us we have known you, all creation lives to hold you. In our living and our
this is the season that the Christian Church calls Lent, the weeks leading up to the great feast of Easter, and traditionally a good time to take a deeper look at what we believe and maybe even a deeper look at the things we're told but find difficult to believe. For example, we're told over and over that God walks with us, that he wants nothing but friendship with us. But do I really believe that God accepts me just as I am?
Dylan has his own very personal experience, both of rejection and acceptance.
I was raised by my mother, who was an alcoholic, and found it very difficult to look after me in the sort of day-to-day practical way that children need looking after, because she was drunk most of the time. And she went through 3 marriages, 3 divorces, 3 violent husbands. And by the time I came to secondary school age, I was extremely angry, mixed up, confused. But at that point, I remember some friends of mine inviting me along to a tent, which turned out to be part of the Billy Graham Mission England in 1984. I actually walked into the tent to see people singing and clapping and playing guitars, and it looked very, very attractive to me. People looked happy. They told me they were Christians. They explained to me that that God loved me, that Jesus loved me, that Jesus accepted me for who I am. All I had to ask was Jesus to come into my heart, as they described it, and ask Jesus to be a part of my life, and he would accept me. Now, that was an extremely attractive proposition, somebody who is offering acceptance to me without me having to satisfy certain criteria or conditions before that happened. So I went for it, and I prayed with them, and I started to go to church from that moment on. I'd come from this extremely difficult and awful background. I had an awful lot going on, and none of that was resolved. It was kind of brushed over, in that now that I knew Jesus and had accepted Jesus and he had accepted me, that somehow all those problems that had been backed up for years would somehow just go away. And obviously they didn't, they hadn't. And they were still there. They'd just been suppressed for a while and were under the surface. When I was 18, I left to go to university. This was really the first time that I'd been away from all the bad memories and all the places that I associated with my past and the people that I associated with the past. And I think it was time for me to start to discover who I really was. And I remember going to the Christian Union and feeling that these people didn't understand me. They seemed to be almost like the people that I'd met before in the church, shiny on the surface, and so long as you could come out with the right jargon and say the right words at the right time, then that was fine. But I didn't feel any sense of identity with these people. I could identify, I felt, with people outside of the Christian Union, who seemed to be more real, more accepting of different kinds of people with different experiences. So I was attracted away from the Christian scene.
We may have shared Dylan's experiences, or we may have been reminded of other similar experiences, some painful. We offer all of these to God as we listen for his word through Scripture.
Then Jesus and his disciples went away to the villages near Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Tell me, who do people say I am?" "Some say that you are John the Baptist," they answered. "Others that you are Elijah, while others say that you are one of the prophets." "What about you?" he asked them. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah."
Part of my looking for God again has been to read. One thing which really struck me quite profoundly was the story of the prodigal son, which Jesus tells in the Bible. The man who has two sons, and one goes to him one day and says, "I want my share of the inheritance before you die. I don't want to wait that long." And he takes that money off and he goes and spends it on prostitutes and having parties and wild living, as it says. And then his money runs out and his friends desert him, and he finds himself working with the pigs. And he thinks to himself, even the servants that work for my dad back at home have a better life than this. I'm going to go back there and ask to be a servant. And his father is actually waiting and looking, as he has been doing every day, for his son to come back. This man is now running out to meet his son and to accept him back. And that helped me to realise and to see God as accepting me. But his acceptance of me precedes any approach that I make to him, whether that approach is done out of a sense of sorrow or guilt or anything like that. Whatever it's from, his acceptance of me is there before I even do that. And I can relax in that
And so we pray, if you come in certainty or in confusion, in anger or in anguish, this time is for us. If you come in silent suffering or hidden sorrow, in pain or promise, this time is for us. If you come and do not know why, to be here is enough. This time is for us. Come now, Christ of the forgiving warmth. Come now, Christ of the yearning tears. Come now, Christ of the transforming touch. This time is for you.
Come as you are, that's how I love you. Come as you are, trust me again. Nothing can change the love that I bear you.
Thank you to Dylan and the team at GRF Christian Broadcasting, and the music was from the monks of Weston Priory. Later this week, we'll be welcoming the leaders of the Methodist Church in Britain for a brief visit to the island. During their year in office, the President and Vice President of the Methodist Conference follow in the footsteps of their founder, John Wesley, by travelling the length and breadth of the country, listening, looking, talking and worshipping with the people they meet. All being well, the President, Reverend Michaela Youngson, and the Vice President, Bala Nana Pragasam, will be my special guests on Praise next week, and I'll be boarding a bus with a big difference. But that's all we have time for this week. Thank you for listening to this week's Praise Podcast. There's a new Praise Podcast available every Sunday morning. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, via the Manx Radio smartphone app or at manxradio.com. And don't forget to take a look at the Praise blog, the home of our church notice board. Go to manxradio.com, on the homepage, click on air, and on the drop-down menu, follow the link for blogs. So, until we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for your company, and I wish you and those you love every blessing in the days ahead.